Our final case for today is United States v. Marcotte. Mr. Sandberg.
May it please the court, counsel. This is a pretty simple case as far as factually before we get to the issue of sentencing. My client was found guilty related to tax issues. He was on bail prior to sentencing. He didn't show up at sentencing. He caught another case for that. He ended up pleading to that. And then we get to the issues that are before this panel, which is whether or not the district court properly calculated the guidelines range. And it's our position for lots of reasons that there was an impermissible counting, and what it resulted in was an increase of three levels based on the use of both 3C1.3 as well as 3147.
So here's the thing.
Why would it not be appropriate to apply two separate enhancements to two separate convictions?
Judge, I'm not sure that in all circumstances that would be true, but in this particular case, it is our belief that it is inappropriate to apply both the 3C1.12 point adjustment as well as the 3C1.3 three-point enhancement. And there's a couple different reasons for that. One, when we look to the specifics of what 3146 says, it gives direct guidance about the way that we're supposed to be looking at that, and it in fact talks about that it's going to run consecutive. And then we can look to the specifics, just a moment, the specifics contained in in 2J1.6, which is the section related to failure to appear by defendant. And I think it's really important to note as it relates to that, absolutely nowhere contained in that sentence in guidelines is there mention that 3146 or that 3C1.3 could be used as an additional enhancement in addition to that which is specifically provided by 3C1.1. I apologize for slowing myself down periodically. We've got a lot of different sections to refer to. And I think that it's important because if 2J1.6 were to have contemplated that something in addition to that which is provided by 3C1.1, we'd see it specifically noted there. And what the practical effect of that is that when Mr. Marcotte pleads to failing to show up for the sentencing, which is an obstruction of justice, It's known there that there's going to be a two-point adjustment related to, because we're combining the two sentences under 3D1.1 as well as the grouping related to 3D1.2, which specifically refers to obstruction of justice findings like 3C1.1.
So here's my bottom line on this. I mean, first of all, the guidelines have proceed on the assumption that these things can be cumulative. Secondly, 3147 talks about any kind of offense that might be committed while somebody's released. People are released all the time. You know, one of the offenses might be failing to appear, another one might be going out and robbing banks or selling drugs or whatever. But, you know, the failure to appear is an offense that you commit while you're on release, and there's a special harm to the judicial system when that happens. Whereas 3C1.1 is a much more generic obstruction enhancement for willfully obstructing, et cetera, justice. Now, I don't disagree with you that the underlying behavior is what's driving both of those, but the guidelines seem to say that's fine. And on top of that, in today's world, we have what I'll I don't want to call it the safety valve because that has a technical term, but we've got the additional possibility for the district judge to take one last look at the sentence under 3553A, make sure that all of these add-ons haven't yielded something that's just too high. And so where's the problem?
Well, the problem is, first, if I can talk about 3146. So 3146 provides both the crime as well as the sentence for that crime. And then when we looked at 3146, we believe that 3147 is intended to encompass those situations where it's some crime other than, for instance, 3146, that specifically...
Why? But where do you get that, though? Because certainly 3146 punishes, you know, failing to appear, but 3147 is broader than that.
But it's the conduct. Under the situation where what we've got 3146, the conduct is the failure to appear, and that is the crime, and then 3147 appears to be addressing that same identical conduct, whereas...
So you don't think 3147 would apply if the person was convicted of the offense of bank robbery?
No,
while he was on release?
That would be entirely different. That, I believe, is where 3147 is properly contemplated, where it's somebody catches a murder case and is convicted, someone destroys government property, anything like that. Those are the situations where 3147 on its face appears to make sense.
But not failure to appear, which is an independent offense.
Not when we have specifically 3146 that addresses that. It's heaping where, based on what both the guidelines read, because when we apply the same statutory construction principles to what we read in the guidelines, and like I indicated before, under 2J1.6, the failure to appear, absolutely nowhere in there do they indicate or contemplate the use of either 3C1.3 or 3147.
But the plain language doesn't have to exclude the fact that their other statutes might be coterminous with a given set of facts. I mean, the plain language of both cover a variety of conduct, and sometimes a discrete episode's going to trigger enhancement under both, and we have cumulative guideline enhancements all the time, don't we?
I don't disagree with you, Your Honor, that there are at times where the guidelines appear to be cumulative in nature, and maybe properly so, but into the particular...
Well, that's what the guidelines actually say. They say, assume it's cumulative, and if we don't want it to be, we're going to tell you. I mean, talk about plain language. There's no reason to bring in the rule of lenity if there's no ambiguity. I mean, plain language tells us how to enhance.
Well, I agree, except in the context of 3146 and 3147, because 3146 specifically already is penalizing an individual for that conduct, that crime, that when, in addition to that, you're applying 3147, we believe it's impermissibly and unconstitutionally penalizing that conduct twice and in violation of both the way the court has to calculate the guidelines as well as under double jeopardy principles in the Fifth Amendment. So unless the court has any additional questions for me.
You can save the rest of your time for rebuttal if you like.
Okay. Thank you very much, Judge.
Ms. Wasserman.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Emily Wasserman, and I'm here on behalf of the government. I would like to address what opposing counsel just said with respect to other crimes committed while on release, such as a bank robbery, murder, destruction of government property. All of those crimes also have statutes punishing them as well, just as failing to appear is punished by Section 3146. So to say that 3146 deals with failing to appear and then 3147 doesn't apply, those statutes dealing with murder, bank robbery, destruction of property also punish those crimes, and then 3147 is an enhancement. And as you said, Judge Wood, the court does have a special interest in people not showing up when they're supposed to show up or committing crimes when they're out on release.
Did you happen to take a look at Application Note 2 to Sentencing Guideline 2J1.6? So that's the guideline setting the offense level for 3146, and it says for those offenses, 3C1.1 doesn't apply unless the defendant obstructed the investigation of the failure to appear count. So was the error actually in using 3C1.1 rather than 3C1.3?
We find that the defendant, Marcotte, did actually obstruct justice in the way that 3C1.1 requires. He did more than just fail to appear. He cut his ankle monitor bracelet, and he went on the run for over 4 months, 145 days, and many, many resources were used in trying to track him down, you know, expenses to taxpayers, taking away from other criminal cases where U.S. Marshals could have been employed otherwise, and the district court noted that on several occasions how obstructive that was. So we feel that that satisfies the 3C1.1 requirements, and then 3C1.3 is because he committed a felony while he was released on bond. But
the obstruction is as to the tax claim, though, the tax charge.
Yes, yes. He obstructed justice in failing to appear for sentencing on his tax claim by going on the run.
Is it your position that every failure to appear would also be an obstruction, or can you fail to appear and not obstruct, and fail to appear in a criminal way?
I think if you are hit by a car and you fail to appear...
Well, that wouldn't be criminal, right?
It wouldn't be criminal.
So let's say I'm convicted for failure to appear because it was willful.
There have been situations in other circuits where they have found that failing to appear in and of itself is criminal. We are taking the stand that the behavior that Marcotte exhibited was more than just failing to appear. It was obstructive.
Well, my question is, you have willful failure to appear, criminal failure to appear, is that always an obstruction?
We believe so, yes. As you noted in the sentencing guidelines, 1B1.1 says that conduct, that some enhancements under Chapters 3 and 4 are triggered by the same conduct, and that was the case here. In Rosas, the Ninth Circuit held that when a defendant is convicted of a federal crime, fails to appear for sentencing, and then is convicted under 18 U.S.C. 3146 as a result of that failure to appear, the district court should account for the failure to appear by enhancing the sentence for the underlying conviction pursuant to guidelines 3C1.1 for obstruction of justice and 3C1.3 for commission of an offense while on release. This court itself in Rigsby noted that the government overlooked the 3C1.3 enhancement when Rigsby jumped bail during his release, a violation of 3146. This circuit said that the 3C1.3 enhancement should have been applied. If the court has no further questions, the government respectfully requests that you affirm the district court sentence, and we rest on our brief.
Thank you.
Thank you
so much.
We have
no further questions. Anything further, Mr. Sandberg?
So one of the issues that was dealt in the brief was related to the 28 months that were associated with the 3146. When the court reached its 78-month total punishment, 3147 contemplates the need to articulate a total punishment. And so I would just note, and I that was indicated in my brief as well, that 3147 in this particular case, to the extent that it is found by this court to be appropriate, there hasn't been an amount associated out of that 28 months to be related to the 3147 aspect of it. We still think that 3147 doesn't apply, but in any event, at the district court level, there wasn't an amount of that total punishment of the 28 months related to or associated with specifically the 3147. So we ask that the conviction stays, but the sentence be reversed and remanded for resentencing. Thank you.
All right, thank you very much. And you were appointed, were you not?
I was.
We appreciate your service very much to the court and to your client. Thanks as well to the government. We will take the case under advisement, and the court will